Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is Seth Green, and you are listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark, and I am so hot, I would desperately like a glass of water. Please, please, give me some water.
This is Cindy Preston, and I'm with Mark on Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Melissa Peterman from CMT's The Singing Bee and the television show Reba, and I have to tell you, I just have to get it off my chest, I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi there. This is Faith Roscoe from General Hospital. You're listening to Mark on Somewhere in Vegas. And you better watch out. We know how to find you if you're not listening.
Hi, this is Shannon Egan from Whippet. And I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hey, this is Lee Allen Baker with Somewhere in Vegas, talking with Mark with a Q.
This is Courtney Cronin. You're listening to Somewhere in Vegas with your host, Mark. And I would make sure to listen every week because he's a sure bet.
Hey, this is the Money Man, Eddie Money. I got two tickets to Paradise in this. You know what? It's Somewhere in Vegas. And what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Hi, this is Crystal Kale, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Terry Nunn from Berlin, and you're listening to Mark Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Miracle Laurie from Joss Whedon's Dollhouse. There are three flowers in a vase, and I'm listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Erin Hill, and you are listening to Mark on Blog Talk Radio and Somewhere in Vegas. Mark is a great guy.
Hi, this is Sean Pulaski. I'm still trying to figure out Mark Pico's sexuality, but I know you're listening to Somewhere Live in Vegas.
Here you go, Mark. I'm sorry. I thought you were she. I'm sorry. Get out of the tent. Let's get out of here.
Hey, this is Lance and Anna from Free Radio. And Anna?
And you're listening to Somewhere in Vegas.
Yes.
My favorite.
You know, that's usually what happens with me. I go to Vegas and I get lost, and so I end up somewhere in Vegas.
Somewhere in Vegas.
But I just don't know where it is.
Not quite sure.
Yeah, word.
Get ready. It's going to be hot. It's in Vegas. Check out Mark. Be there or be square.
Hey, everybody, it's Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm Mark Sikiu. I'm your host. I ended up coming in a little bit, an hour early before we can get Zig on. I had scheduled him for 2 o'clock instead of 1, so I was a little bit confused. I've been confused all week in terms of what's going on with my show. Hopefully everything will be ironed out next week so I can actually have the exact times at which I get my guests on. With that in mind, I can't exactly reschedule an episode. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a little music right now, and I'll upload some Throwback Thursday clips of some guests I've had in the past, so we can kill an hour before we go and talk to Zig. And then when I will replace the audio with just Zig's interview coming up in the next day or so. So just to kind of let you guys know, I'm going to go ahead and play a little bit of something. Here's Made of March. We're going to have them on coming up. Let's see here. Coming up in April, they were happy enough to send us a couple of their tracks from their new album that's be coming out next month. So I'm going to play March to May, Georgia. And stay tuned. I'll be playing some old school interview clips while we're waiting for our guests to call in about another hour. Here we go. March to May, Georgia.
Take me home, Georgia. Going away for a while. Take me home and take everything I own. 'Cause it'll only I'm leaving at the door. See the
Take me home, Georgia, Georgia, call me back to you. Take me home, Georgia.
And it fades away.
turn around,
every time I turn around,
I see your face,
your face.
I see your face.
Even though I've lost you, down, down, down. Ah, 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 ah.
That was Embers by March to May. Like I said, we're going to have them on the show coming up next month. And they're releasing their new album. That Embers is going to be their first single off of their new album. So I really look forward to talking to the duo that is March to May. It's really, really haunting, haunting stuff, as it were. Anyway, so since we are waiting on our guest and she won't be here, he won't be here until the top of the hour, I'm going to play an old school clip here. This is what I call my Discovery Scandal special. It's something I had edited together a couple years ago, of a couple interviews that I've done in the first couple years of my show. I was able to get two really unique guests on the show. First, Mikey from American Chopper, very popular at the time. They've soon kind of went their separate ways, as it were. So we have him as well, and we also have the Survivor Man himself. Let's see here. Give me a second here. Les Stroud, and I was one of my most played interviews in terms of downloads. Of my whole entire run, as it were. There's only a couple others that are probably a little bit more. But Les was very interesting talk. He ended up talking a little bit about Bigfoot a little bit. One of my callers had called in and asked about Bigfoot. He wound up a couple years later doing an episode of Survivor Man dealing with Bigfoot. So you'll actually hear probably what was the inklings of the beginning of what it was. So I think, if I remember correctly, Les is first and then Mikey is second, but you guys can check that out as well. So Les Stroud and Mikey Tuttle, like I said, this is my Discovery Channel special I did a couple years ago. So enjoy these Throwback Thursday interviews.
Log Talk Radio.
You're listening to Somewhere in Vegas on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a special edition of Somewhere in Vegas on Blog Talk Radio. This is the Discovery Channel special. I'm replaying two interviews from two of the characters from Discovery Channel and its family of companies. First of all, we'll have an interview with Les Stroud. He's the host and main character on Survivor Man on Discovery Channel. Then we'll have an interview with Mikey Tuttle, who is a part of American Chopper on TLC, which is a part of the Discovery Channel networks. Make sure you check them out at their channels, discoverychannel.com and Discovery and TLC. Make sure you check them out. First of all, we're going to have a little interview with Les Stroud. It's a little bit of description of what Les does. Living off the land takes a new meaning when wilderness expert and filmmaker Les Survivor Man Stroud spends 9 harrowing weeks alone in a variety of survival simulations. Stroud's idea of nature outing is probably a little different from yours and mine. He takes off alone and heads to a punishing corner of the back of beyond with nothing but a few cameras to document his and often miserable experiences. From the Arctic packed ice to the frigid jungle and the feared jungles of Central America, Survivor Man highlights Stroud's extraordinary super self-relevance and self-reliance and survivor skills. In each episode, he is set down in a deserted wilderness and left to fend for himself, no food, no water, no shelter, no matches. With custom cameras and plenty of black humor, Stroud will spend 9 weeks documenting his battle to survive in 9 separate locations for Survivor Man. Whether marooned on a tropical shoreline or deposited on the searing desert sands, Les Stroud takes living off the land to the extreme. You can catch Les on Discovery Channel. He has shows off and on, and he's going to have a new season coming up this coming at the end of the summer. So here's my interview with Les Stroud, and this was taking March the 12th.
It's just so neat to watch them kind of survive. I mean, it's just basic that way, I guess. I can't put a finger on it.
I love it too. And I mean, I've seen the Bear Grylls, and I like Les better. I think he's a little bit more raw and out there a little bit more. And he has a kind of a good sense of humor out there when it comes to it. So it's really, really kind of cool to see him try to survive in the middle of nowhere. And he has a really interesting background as well. He was a music producer before he was an outdoorsman. And it was just really interesting to do it.
Hello.
So. Hey, Larry.
Hey.
How's everything going?
Good.
Good. Have you been filming as of late?
Yep. I just got back from Alaska, actually.
Oh, excellent, excellent. For those of you who want to call and ask Bear a question, it's 347-215-7952. That's 347-215-7952. I mean less, I should say.
Well, now there's a Freudian slip and a half.
Yeah, that was. Because we were just talking about, I was just talking about Bear and how much that we like you a little bit better. So we have a guy named Foot Doctor on the line with us as well. First of all, can you tell me a little bit about how you came up with the idea of just stranding yourself in the middle of nowhere and surviving?
So first of all, I'll clarify that what I do for real, that I'm not an actor and I don't go home at night to a hotel. So there's quite a big difference in the two shows. How I started getting into this was exactly from that. I was teaching survival, learning survival, training in it. But in addition, I was also a filmmaker and a musician, and I just wanted to combine the two of them. When the Survivor series hit really big for CBS, I started doing some interviews and stuff, and I realized that it was the right time to pitch my idea. And I called up a network and said, look, you know, I've got this combination of being a filmmaker and a survival instructor, and you aren't going to find that anywhere else, and here's my idea. You drop me out in the middle of nowhere, and I'll come back with a survival odyssey on film, and I'll be there, you know, without a crew. And they loved it. And the rest is history. It sort of took off from there.
And what kind of training does it take for you to do these missions?
I've got my own years of training and survival behind me. But in addition to that, before each location, before I do each spot, I go and I spend a week on location training and learning, and from some usually a local survival expert or native or whatever the case is. And so that I know, you know, I can't know what plants are going to kill me or not kill me just, you know, from a book or from, you know, inherent knowledge. So I have to go down and train in that.
And what do you think is the most dangerous environment that you've ever had to face?
The most dangerous environment is probably would have been the jungle. There's just so much that's poisonous down there. And you're fine if you're given the knowledge of how to deal with it, but it just seems to be a lot of opportunity to get stung or bitten or scraped up against something, and I think the jungle would be it.
Okay, and on the flip side, what was probably the best place for you to survive?
Probably the best place. You know, I'm going to suggest that the in Arizona, in the desert. It all comes down to time of year too. I mean, I could say Northern Ontario in August is a fantastic place to survive. So it depends on the season. But within the making of Survivor Man, I was in Arizona in December, and it wasn't really that bad. Temperature-wise, it was quite pleasant. So there was food. So that was probably the easiest I've had of it.
And was there a moment? I mean, there must have been several moments. I've watched the series. There are several moments where you weren't expecting something to go wrong, but it did. Can you think of one story that kind of came out of your head?
Probably the Kalahari Desert was the roughest. In that one, I got heat stroke. And heat stroke can kill you very quickly. It was so hot. I'm trying to remember the temperature. It was 101 degrees in the shade, and it was another 20 degrees hotter on the surface of the sand. And that was brutal. All the water I had was as hot as coffee, and I got heat stroke that day and almost succumbed to it. So that's the closest I've come to being in real trouble.
And I mean, after you get done with these missions and come back home, and I mean, is it good to come back home, have a hot shower, have a hot meal?
It's killer. It's amazing. It brings a whole new meaning to the word shower. It's those weeks are rough. They're hard on the body. They're tough on the body. They're tough on the mind. picked up on the emotions, and coming home and getting cleaned up is huge. It's really an amazing feeling.
And what about your family? I know that you go on these 7-day trips, and plus you have to do the training for an extra week, so you're gone for a long part of time, and then you come back home and see your family. What's it like?
It's hard to be away from them, for sure. It's difficult emotionally to be away from them. I've got young children that are growing, and that's kind of rough on me. But as far as survival, Matt, they trust me. They know that I keep myself safe. They know that I won't allow myself to lose life or limb for a TV show.
Okay, Foot Doctor, do you have any questions for Les?
Well, sure. Hey, I just want to start out, Les, say I love your show. It's awesome. I've seen every episode multiple times. And I tell everybody to watch.
Thank you very much.
Hey, you're welcome. I'm dying to try it myself, but I don't think I should after watching your shows. But I have a funny question, a little offbeat. And I have a patient who is into Bigfoot.
Right.
And he says, okay, well, you're a foot doctor, and Bigfoot have tracks. And he's kind of trying to get me interested in looking at the tracks and so on. And I was wondering, I know you've spent some time doing shows up north in the woods here in North America, and have you ever run across what they like to call Bigfoot sign or tracks or anything?
No, I've never run across any tracks. I know people that have and stuff, but I have heard a few strange things out there that I can't explain that get me thinking. There's I always say with that one big question, and there's two ways of posing that question. You know, you can always say, do you believe in Bigfoot? And that makes you look like a wacko if you say yes. Or you can ask the question, do you believe that the possibility of a bipedal ape existing in remote patches throughout the course of the world is possible? If you ask the question that way, it's like, yeah, I think, you know, it might be possible. After all, they found that fish that they thought was extinct 500 million years ago, and they found schools of it. You know, so it depends on how you pose the question. But I have heard some weird things out there. Some of them I can, you know, mostly I can explain them. Even recently, you know, I heard things that's like, man, that just, you know, I can't think of what makes that sound. A bear doesn't do it. A moose doesn't do it. Wolves don't do it. You know, so like that, but no tracks, nothing like that.
Hmm. Okay, that's very interesting, though. And I have the same sort of sense about this. I guess I call it an issue in a way, because there are a lot of people out there, especially they're on Blog Talk Radio and they have shows, and you know, they're adamant that it's there. You know, and there's most of us scientists or science oriented people are kind of like, well, I don't know. You know, show me a body or something.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Like, what was it? Was it the silicon? Was that the fish? I mean, mm-hmm. it's really hard. I mean, you know, if I were to, you know, go out and try to search for, you know, a dead and decaying bear, well, I'm in the wilderness all the time. I've never seen one.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. They pointed that out. There was a show on television about putting a deer carcass out there in the woods, and they had a film going, and they took a picture every so many seconds or minutes or so. And it literally disappeared in just a few weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it does kind of say, hmm.
And then, you know, and then you got all the other anecdotal references of people who say they have seen, you know, have seen it alive and have seen tracks and had rocks thrown at them and this and that. So the jury's out for me on lots of cool things like that.
Yeah, me too. I think great answer.
And do you have one piece of advice for somebody that's stranded in the middle of nowhere? Is there any certain thing that in every scenario that you should think about?
Staying calm. That's the panic is the killer, you know. And if you stay calm, you relax yourself. And then the best way to do that is to assess your situation, assess what you have on you, assess, you know, where you are. If you do these assessments right up front, you give yourself a whack of knowledge. And once you get that knowledge, the knowledge helps to calm you down because you realize, oh, you know what? A half a mile back, there was a cabin. Okay, good. All I have to do is get back to there. And, oh, you know what? I still have a week and a half worth of food here. Okay, so I've got that. So, you know, you start to put all this assessment together and you realize maybe your situation is not so bad and that calms you down. That's the key.
And music always has been a part of your show. You've always brought your harmonica out there. How much does music mean to you when you're out in the field?
Music is still everything to me. Music is still huge to me. I still release CDs and songs and that all the time with the band that I play with and different groups that I play with. I'm doing a concert series where I'll be showing my wilderness images and playing live on stage. So music goes with me out there, but only it does get, I will say that the wilderness can, you know, it does kind of replace music. It's got its own song, and it sort of takes over. My mind goes into a different place. I don't find myself really writing songs out there unless that's my intention. Instead, I kind of take in everything about the wilderness and just enjoy that, and then get back to my music when I come back. But of course, I always have my harmonica with me, so I can blow a tune every now and again.
Okay. Do we know when the new season's coming out, Les?
I'm gonna give it late summer, early into the fall is when they'll be ready. I'm just heading out now to do a bunch more shows, and Papua New Guinea, Madagascar, Sierra Nevadas, a bunch of different places. Going to try and keep some a lot more local. Do some more local, like domestic ones, and I'm just about to head out, so you got me right before heading off to do some more.
Okay, excellent. And then you can catch him at www.survivorman.ca, right?
Correct, or you can go to my personal site, which is lesstroudonline.com.
Okay, thanks a lot for coming on the show, Les.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Les Stroud from March the 12th. If you were up that early, thank your foot doctor for coming on the show to assist me. And it was a pretty good show. I loved being able to talk to Les, and it took me about a couple months to get him. Right now, I'm going to go ahead and play the other interview, but before we do, I'm going to kind of introduce it. First of all, we're going to be talking to Mikey Tuttle, and this was an interview I conducted with him on March 3rd. Mikey Tuttle has been a celebrity when he began working for OCC, that's Orange County Choppers, as a secretary and custodian, whereas Mike would gleefully say, "I answer the phones and take out the trash," acting as comic relief for the show. His presence also seems to have a calming effect on his father, who never shows any sort of frustration she feels with Paul Jr. Mikey is often able to antagonize his father with little consequence. He is now a major and popular character on the show and appears at promotional events for Orange County Choppers, OCC, as well as continuing to work for family business. He is now the current webmaster of orangecountychoppers.com. So we're going to go ahead and play a little bit of his interview. We're going to play a little bit of Mikey's interview here. Here we go, Mikey Tuttle. This is back from March 3rd.
Mark?
Hey, Mikey.
How are you, Mark?
Good. How's things going on in the shop?
They're going well.
Good to hear.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you guys are obviously taping for the next season?
Yes, we are, actually. Yeah, we've got plenty of bikes lined up for the season.
And I guess, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to bring up that we had traveled to South Africa, Brazil. My father got married. A lot of exciting stuff.
I'll tell your father congratulations.
I will.
And, I mean, when you guys were in Brazil this season around, you definitely were like rock stars. What it feels like to kind of be like a rock star out there in Brazil?
For me, it's unsettling, to be totally honest. But it's flattering at the same time, you know. But anytime you get into a crowd with this, you know, as masses of people, and they've gone a little too far and they've been drinking, it's never what you think it would be, you know. It's not like a Beatlemania feeling where you feel good and you get out of the plane and you give everybody a peace sign like Nixon or something. It's kind of scary for me.
And what does it mean to you know, do you think the show would have carried, do you think that this show would carry you so far as being a huge star on TV?
Did I think it was going to happen? But what's the question? Can you repeat the question again?
Oh, I
apologize.
I can repeat the question. I mean, do you think after being on the show, you'd be such a huge star?
No, I didn't. I never thought I would play a big role in the show at all. I just thought I would kind of be part of the background or as background of you know, different stories, especially that have to do with my father and brother's family. But I never thought I would be one of the main characters in the show. It's just motorcycle engineering and designing, and anything that has to do with it really isn't in my blood. And they love it, so just worked out well.
Okay, if you have any questions for Mikey, the number is 347-215-7952. That's 347-215-7952. And And what do you exactly, is there an exact duty that you guys, do you yourself do in the shop?
Not multi-purpose, but my official title is like webmaster, which I think they just gave me to be nice, because I'm almost computer illiterate, but I have a really good support team.
Now, this season you said that you were a huge fan of the Michigan Wolverines. I mean, have you ever considered maybe going to college eventually?
Yeah, I thought I'd go to college when I was 26. I don't know why 26. It just seemed like a good year. But 26 is coming past because of the show. I've been very busy. Maybe. You know, you never know. I'd have to explore my options, I suppose, after the show's finished.
And, I mean, and would you go to Michigan? Would you consider going to Michigan?
I'd love to, of course, yeah, if they would accept me. I mean, based on my high school grades, they probably wouldn't, but I don't know how they go about it these days.
And in any certain genre that you'd think that, and when going to college, what you know, is there any certain degree that you would love to get?
Psychology.
Psychology, very interesting.
Yeah, I work with a bunch of cuckoos, so it's kind of nice to try to break down their behavior and figure it out.
And speaking of which, it kind of seemed like the glue that holds the whole situation together between your father and your brother. I mean, has it always been that way? You know, basically that you've been kind of the peaceful person between the two.
Yeah, you know, growing up when there was six of us all together, I had a lot more refereeing to do. So it's always kind of been my place in the family, but now it's luckily only my place pretty much between my father and my brother.
And would you ever consider maybe doing like a show on the side or whatever? I saw that this season you guys did a show where you went up to the Boston area and got lobsters and brought them back. Would you consider maybe spinning off and doing another show just on your own?
Yes. Yes, and anybody who's listening, I'm definitely up to it.
Yeah, you're absolutely welcome here at Blog Talk to do a radio show if you ever wanted to. But
thank you.
and let me take a look. Let's take a look at this season coming up. You guys did a bike from My Name's Earl. You obviously starred in one of the episodes. What was it like being on the set of My Name's Earl?
You know, we really didn't get to go on the set quite yet. We're going to be, I guess, doing a cameo in one of their episodes soon. With the writer strike and all, we couldn't do it as part of our show, you know. And but we did, however, get the writer Jeff Garcia and Jason Lee and a couple guys from the cast to come over to the shop while we were building the bike and designing it, and they were just wonderful people.
And obviously Daytona Bike Week's coming up in the next couple weeks. What's it like going to be like going back down there?
Well, you know, that's kind of our bread and butter. That's where we started out, and we love going back down there to see the people and, you know, mainly get away from the cold weather up here. And we're just kind of looking forward to it. We're going to be at our trailer signing right next to the Speedway on March 6th and 7th. And it'll be me, my brother, Jason Poole, Rick Petko, and Jason and Rick will be there the 8th as well.
And any bikes you bring down to Daytona this year?
Yeah, most of our production bikes will be on display along with, I believe, some of our specialty bikes.
And your guys' world headquarters is going to be open up this coming March.
Yes, at the end of March, we're going to be moving over there. I kind of like it. It is probably about 20 minutes further away from my house than our shop right now is, but it'll definitely be a bigger facility, and I believe I'll be getting my own office. That's kind of exciting, you know?
Yeah, that'll be interesting, you know, obviously to see the new decorations and the new office, so that'll be very interesting for you. You guys, I think you guys are right now, we have a couple more bikes still going, and this week episode you have Craftsman Diehard bikes that you guys work on, right?
Yes, sir. Craftsman and Diehard. All bought by Sears. We had fun. I had a lot of fun with the Die Hard build because my brother built the Craftsman. My brother built the Die Hard bike. I'm sorry. My father built the Craftsman, and then I built a battering ram with the help of our engineer Jim Quinn, out of a go-kart engine and Die Hard batteries. It actually runs on Die Hard batteries, and we were able to ram through about 5 doors with it. So that was kind of an accomplishment for me. And at the same time, it was very much a fun time.
Okay. Tell me what to look forward to this next season. What companies are you involved with these new bikes?
Well, as you know, Craftsman and Die Hard. Klipsch, which is a speaker company. So anybody knows anything about speakers, they know Klipsch is... It's kind of one of the top-of-the-line speakers. A Vega Bike, which is a plumbing fitting company. BSN, which is a nutritional supplement company. The Army National Guard Bike. The My Name is Earl Bike. And Gander Mountain, which is pretty much a store for the outdoorsman. Kind of camo, camping, guns, all that fun stuff.
Excellent. Is there any certain bike that you liked that you guys made?
I really enjoyed building the Mikey Vinny bike.
Mikey Mini bike, yeah. And what about your brothers and all that? Is there any biker that your father, your brother built that you really like?
Yeah, my father. I really liked the POW MIA bike that he built. I thought it was a nice tribute, and it was a very nice mix between an older style and a newer style chopper. And for my brother, it's the Black Widow still. That's still, to me, to this day, I think it's the nicest looking bike he's built.
Okay. And obviously they have those Mikey for President shirts. Do you still make those guys make those shirts?
I think they do. I'm not certain.
Okay,
I'm pretty certain they do though.
It seems to be very popular with the people that are my fans on my show. So
yeah, a lot of kids like them.
A lot of kids like them. Yeah, and I mean, yeah. If you're hold on 1 second. We do have a call.
I do.
623.
Let's take it.
623, are you there? Oh, lost him. okay.
Yeah. Hey,
what else can we talk about?
You should just have, like, the program manager call in.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, a lot of my listeners are strangely enough are shy. I mean, I get a lot of great guests on here, and
really,
I mean, yeah, I've got a lot of country stars on here. I had Charlie Daniels on a couple months ago, I have a lot of guys from like TLC and Discovery and VH1 on, and yeah, they're always so shy about trying to call in or whatever. So
I met Charlie Daniels' son in Nashville not too long ago. Nice fella.
Yeah. I mean, is there any? I mean, you met Billy Joel. Is there any other celebrities that you would really love to meet?
Well, we got to build a bike with Bill Murray. That was wonderful. He was my tops. But aside from him, Jack Nicholson.
Do you like basketball at all, or?
Not so much anymore. I've met too many basketball players, and they're way too egotistical. Same goes for most sports, actually. It's kind of a shame, but a lot of these guys have just relied too heavily on their physical ability, and they've never developed as people. But some of them are really good people, so I don't want to group them all together.
Are you still playing badminton?
All the time. Love it.
And then, I mean, a little factor they had was on the show was that you always wear your shorts. Is that true?
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's 8 below. I love it.
You love it?
Yeah, just the freedom. You know, I'm one of those people.
Yeah, and what do you think? I mean, I was listening to your brother talk at the Central Christian Church here in Vegas, and He was talking a little bit about his faith and how he's, you know, he's thinking about going to church a lot more often now. And he talked a little bit about, you know, the fact that when he first cut of the show, he thought it was a disaster. Do you kind of think the same way when you first episode?
No, you know, I didn't have as much at stake. I was just working for my brother Daniel at the time, actually, doing iron work. So I had no real stake in the business for the motorcycle company or anything like that. And from watching it, I really didn't think it was that bad. They were just being kind of paranoid about it, and I could see how they could kind of look upon it as something that could have tanked their business. But once they saw, you know, the ratings and everything like that, and the reply and all the emails and the fact that, you know, our website kept crashing from being overloaded with people, they just went with it. And they've been arguing like that for 6 years.
And what about living with a family that obviously your brother said that that addiction was a big part of his life, and so was your father. What was it like watching them, you know, struggle with it and be able to overcome it?
You know, it shows a lot about a person when they're addicted to something and then they give it up. It doesn't really matter what it is, but. You know, like especially when my father gave up drinking, it was a big deal for everybody because you know when you're an alcoholic and you have children, you know, you do some real serious permanent damage to them, and to see him clean up his act, especially how bad of an alcoholic he was, it definitely showed me a lot about you know, how strong he can be. And then of course when Paulie, you know, stopped doing his thing.
And what do you think overall about the show? I mean, like I said again, you're a big huge star now. It was like you're mobbed in Brazil, and obviously going down to Daytona, there's gonna be lines and lines of people wanting to get your autograph. What's it mean to you? Do you ever think, you know, when you're a little kid that you're gonna be this big when it comes to being a star?
No, you never really encounter it, and you never really think about what goes with it. But it is very flattering. And I do look forward to seeing everybody who's going to come out to see us in Daytona.
Okay, and I guess finally, you know, what's it going to be like the next couple months? What do we look forward to with Full Moat DC?
Pardon me, can you ask that again? I'm sorry.
What are we going to look forward to the next couple months? What are we going to look forward to for Moat DC the next couple months?
A lot of violence and nudity. No, you're just going to see, we're going to be moving into the new shop, so it's going to be exciting, you know, we're going to up the staff and you know, whatever new creation, creations, I should say, that my brother will come out with, I guarantee will be appealing to the viewer.
Okay, I've got one more question. I totally forgot to ask you this. Your brother had said that you guys had Pez dispensers.
We have Pez heads, yeah. We're the first living people who were turned into Pez heads.
Okay.
That's really cool. Between
really
that
cool.
And having a bobblehead, I think, are the coolest things that I think have been marketed with our faces.
Okay. Well, definitely pick us up, and you know, OCC, you guys obviously have a website because you're the webmaster.
Yep, www.orangecountychoppers.com.
Okay, hold on 1 second. We got one call before we leave. Okay,
sure.
3.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. How are you? This is Nikki Starr.
Hi, Nikki Starr.
Hi. I want to know where to get y'all's Pez dispensers.
I believe if you just go on our website.
Uh-huh.
www.orangecountychoppers.com. You can find them there.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Well,
and I appreciate it. Bye.
Goodbye.
And there you go. One of my daughter fans. Uh-huh. So we'll make sure to stop by OCC at orangecountychoppers.com. And you're the webmaster. So.
Webmaster, yes. It's a
Title
that doesn't precede me, really.
Yeah. So, yeah, hopefully we'll see some great stuff. And you guys are on TLC now, right?
TLC, yes. Thursdays at 9.
Thursdays at 9. Make sure you check out American Chopper this coming Thursday at 9 o'clock. Well, thank you for calling in, Mikey. We'd love to have you on the show another time, and work hard as much as you possibly can.
I'd love to be, and I'll try not to. And thank you for the offer.
Okay, will do. Thanks a lot, Mikey.
All right, take it easy, buddy.
Yeah, you too.
Bye.
Okay, that was my Discovery Channel special, guys. We've got about another 12 minutes until our guest comes on. As it grows from a liberal arts brand, we're talking a little bit about art and as well. We have, like I said, we have a busy couple weeks. I was supposed to have Sulan. Gotta pop it up real quick, guys. I was supposed to have a guest on this week, but I ended up screwing up when she was supposed to be on the show, so I had to reschedule. Let's see here. I need to go to my site because I want to update you guys on what's going on while we're waiting for our guest to come on. excuse me. Let's see. Yeah. But yeah, we have a busy April coming up as well. I'm trying to book some really cool guests for a couple weeks. But it should be we should have probably the April schedule pretty much down. Coming up on there as well. Let's see here. Sulan LaFontaine, we're going to have her this week due to some me screwing up in terms of day she was supposed to be on, plus the fact that the time was wrong, that we decided, and her, actually, I was going to have her on Wednesday, but she... She ended up having some filming to do on Wednesday. So we're going to have her on Tuesday next week. So we'll have a special show on Tuesday. We'll be doing three shows, I think, next week. So we'll have a Monday show, a Tuesday show, and a Thursday show next week. But we'll have Sulan on. And Sulan's going to be interesting because she's an actress. She's also a stunt driver, a stunt woman. She's currently in the upcoming Fast 7 movie. So we'll... have her on coming up on Tuesday. On Monday, we're going to have a filmmaker, Summer Moore. She has a project coming out called The Warning. It's a horror-based film, and it's available on demand and DVD. We're going to talk to Summer about that as well, and also being a female filmmaker, it's kind of been a theme over the past couple months in terms of what's been going on the show. Let me see here. Looking up the next couple weeks. Next Thursday, we're going to have a musician and author, The Black Hef. We'll be talking a little bit about him and his new book that's coming out as well. So we're pretty much busy next week. We've got three whole shows next week to be able to take a look at as well. So please look out for that as well. Excuse me. Well, we've got about 10 minutes, so what I'll do is I'm going to play a little music here, since we have music. I'm going to go ahead and play Made of March, Count the Days. Made of March is going to be on coming up next month. I believe it'll be April 27th, it'll be the last Monday of the month. We're going to have Made of March on, talking about their new album, which comes out just a couple days before the interview that we have, so... we'll have Made of March on the show as well. So we'll play some Made of March. Maybe we'll play a little bit of Josie Milner right after that. We had her on the show last year. Then we'll play a little Not Pretty right after that as well. Then by then, we should have enough time for our guest to call in. So here we go. We're going to go Made of March, Count the Days, so then we'll have some Josie Milner right after that. So we'll be right back. Mr. Zig Gruz.
In the spring, when I leave LA, I hear your voice, though you're far away. The months are long.
Breathe.
That was Josie Milner with Not Pretty, and right before that, March to May, Count the Days. It's going to be great to be able to have March to May on the show next month to talk about their music as well. I've had so many great musicians on over the past couple times, and quite a few of them have been successful, so it's been great to be able to see that as well. Without further ado, we have a very cool guest. He has a... is actually a dealer in art, which is a very interesting investment opportunity, not only as an investment opportunity, but a way to really kind of spice up your house or enjoy the pleasantries of owning a piece of art. His company helps anyone do that, and for either purpose. So I would like to welcome Zig Gruz on with us of Liberator Art Brand. How are you doing, Zig?
Yes, hi. How are you? Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. Tell us a little bit about how the company got started.
We started, we had an idea about 2 years ago, and it got started about 15 years ago, I was involved in a frivolous lawsuit, and I found out the hard way that even if you're not guilty or whatever, it's going to cost you a lot of money just to fight it and prove you're innocent. And even if you win, you lose because it's going to cost you a lot of money to fight it. So it makes long story short, it cost me $30,000. And nobody lost, nobody won, but it left very bad scar on me. And I spent next 15 years trying to find out the ways how regular people could protect themselves, at least portion of the money that nobody can take it from them.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You know, you get to that point where you're kind of in court, and it does take, it does end up, costing more than what anything is worth. So this is kind of a tough situation, as it were, too. Tell me a little bit about how you got started in art itself. I mean, obviously, this kind of passion for art came before the company started.
Right. So about 2 years ago, I was, I was laid off from my job, and that I worked like electronic engineer for most of my life. And I was start looking in different opportunities that are available. And I was looking at art galleries because I always had a, feeling for art. And, art is timeless. It's really something that people enjoy over centuries. And somewhere in the middle of all this, I had a kind of eureka moment. And it came to me how we can marry art with financial protection and offer people safe investment opportunities that they virtually without risk. So all our art pieces come with 10 years money back worldwide return guarantee and free financial protection from just about everything, including lawsuits and creditors and stuff like that. And so what we do, we manufacture art of talented artists under our own brand. And so all art under our brand has these guarantees and all these benefits.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to have that guarantee. And more than factly that the customers have guarantee, you got talented artists that are under you that are giving you some really great art. And they're making you're making a living out of producing some of this art for you as well. First of all, tell me a little bit about how you kind of find these talented artists, and what do you look for in terms of your artists?
Well, we have a number of artists right now, and in the long run, we're hoping to help hundreds, perhaps even thousands of artists. Because, artist's life is not that simple, as we all know. Unless you become famous, it's even hard to make a living. So we would like to change that, and we would like to make more artists famous, create more demand for their art. And so that's what we're doing. And at the same time, we are offering to regular people opportunity to safely invest in art. In our art pieces range from $500 to $500,000. So it's, anybody can use it, rich or poor, or anybody in between. And everybody benefiting from a peace of mind knowing that whatever they invest today in art, they have 10 years, option to return it from anywhere in the world. And it comes with a free replacement guarantee. And also, like I already mentioned it, all money people use to buy our art are automatically protected from lawsuits and creditors and stuff like that. Even you can use it even for economic and political crisis, it might protect. And there is nobody else in the world offering this type of guarantees and benefits. So one of the key features is it doesn't matter how rich or how poor you are, you buy a piece of art, one of our art, and whatever money you invested, it's safe. It's better than a bank. It's better than having a gold or whatever, because one of the things our art is guarantees are mobile and liquid. So what we mean by that, so you could be in a foreign country, and if you need to recover, decide to return your art, you can. All you have to do is get in touch with us, and we as soon as we establish that you are the registered owner, your money will be refunded anywhere in the world. And there is only 20% fee, return fee, and that's the only fee we charge in case of return. Otherwise, there is no fees, no management fees, nothing, no penalties, nothing like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to have that protection and know that your art is kind of protected in that sense of the firm financially as well. There's also an added benefit in terms of, being able to have the low-end investor or the starting investor, kind of buy a piece of art, not only for the financial benefit, but also for the beauty of the art itself. I mean, it's there is that factor, too, that you're giving an opportunity for some of these people that, may not be able to afford a $10,000 piece, the benefit of having a very nice little piece that had to hang in their office or hang in their home and really appreciate it.
Right. And one of the things we also offer to make more affordable for people and to better serve them and better protect them, we offer opportunities that only for 25% down, if you want to call it that way, they can own a piece of art. And, let's say if it's a $10,000 piece, all they have to pay is $2,500. At the same time, they benefit fully in case art appreciates, so they can still benefit from that, from art ownership. And at the same time, they benefit fully with protection for $10,000. Okay, so they can pay it upfront, $10,000, and take loan against it, and they can do that anytime during the 10 years or at the time of purchasing. And so for out-of-pocket, just 25%, people can have 100% ownership and 100% protection.
Yeah, now we were doing, you had mentioned earlier about the expanding art world. Obviously, painters are usually the ones that are highlighted a lot more, but I believe you also deal in sculptures. Is that correct?
No, we only deal in painting at this point. We might expand to sculptures later on, but at this point, we only deal in painting.
It's great to be able to see that as well. I mean, in terms of the art world, I mean, how do you see it going right now? Obviously, you're thinking, you're seeing that these painters are going to obviously appreciate over time as well. What makes painting, do you think, timeless? And one of those things where a lot of people absolutely enjoy having a piece of art hanging in their house or in their office.
It's a great question, and let me try to answer it as well as I can. We all know that people appreciated painting for thousands of years. And this is something about art, you know, just like perhaps music or art or any kind of art, that even if you do not have a talent yourself, usually people can appreciate it. You know, there is something special about it. But one of the things is, like, what makes art worth a certain amount? Like, what makes one art worth $10,000, $100, and one $20 million? And as a matter of fact, like, in case of paintings, it could be very similar looking. So there is a lot of decisions go into the, like when people appraise it, art or painting, like how old is it, is the artist alive, and what is the demand for it. But mainly, all those things are important, but mainly it's a supply and demand. It's not because, you know, Picasso maybe worth $20 million, not because it's a Picasso, because he's dead or because he's so special. It's just because people are willing to pay for it. There is a demand for it. So what we do with our guarantee, we can basically price our art, we can set the price. So let's say if you set the price for a relatively unknown artist at $100,000, and as long as we are willing to buy it back, in effect, when we take it back in case of return for $100,000, so we are establishing a new position for that artist. So this artist now can benefit greatly because now his art is selling for a lot higher price than it would normally sell. And what we want to do, we want to grow this market and create, you know, just like a stock market and, you know, like commodities market. There is no reason why art cannot be more liquid market, because today art is very risky investment, you know. Very few people can afford it, and like I said, it's very risky unless you can buy really well-known classics. Chances are you're gonna lose money. And what we are doing, we basically take risk out of it. We basically telling people, if you buy our art, you have 10 years option to return it. If you're not happy the way it performs, that it doesn't increase enough in price for you, return it. What we're going to do in the meantime, we obviously going to try to make our art appreciated so people do not return it. Okay. So this way, like, everybody wins.
Now, in terms of that, I mean, just expanding on that, you know, obviously, you know, you need to get these artists out there in the forefront as well. I mean, what are kind of some of the marketing strategies that you've seen from some of these artists to be able to display their pieces? Obviously, they do gallery openings or they do their own shows, but kind of just expanding on what the art scene is like now, especially with social media, as it were. I mean, how is it to market art and to be able to get the word out about some of these artists and some of their pieces?
Well, normally it's very difficult. It's actually similar to, like, actors and actresses. You know, some actors and actresses make millions of dollars, and some actors hardly make a living. And until somebody kind of notices you, give you a chance, chances are you're never going to make a lot of money, at least while you're alive. And that's what a lot of artists face today. They may be great artists, they may be very talented, and whatever else they may have special, but unless there is a demand for their art, okay, that the people actually like it and start buying it, okay, chances are they're not going to be successful, and that's unfortunate. And we are trying to change that. We are trying to make it easier for them because we are giving people option to take it back. So we could actually, create a lot better environment for artists' market, that they can, sell their art at a lot more money, and there is going to be a lot more demand for it.
Yeah, and you know, people want to change art for one reason or another. It may be a simple reason as a decor changed, or it might be something a little more complex. They wanted to have a different kind of piece hanging where they want to see it. You know, how is it for that kind of, you know, obviously that's something good for you because some of these pieces may, you know, obviously will appreciate or whatever. And if somebody, you know, sells one piece and then gets another, then that means more business for you. But are you seeing that as you know, something that's going to happen more often as the company grows and as the company goes down the line over the next couple decades?
Well, it's very possible. We are hoping that people actually going to keep art and collect more art, so they're free, obviously, to return it and get another piece. But a lot of times people do not buy art because they like the picture, especially when we're talking about considerable amount of money. They're usually buying the art that they're hoping it will appreciate. Because nowadays, you know, it's a lot easier than it used to be. Now, just about everybody can make a picture of something and they can put a picture on the wall that they like. That picture could be worthless, but they could put a picture they like. So in terms of art, again, it's a supply and demand. What people are willing to buy it for and what is the market on it. So you just because you like a picture, it doesn't mean it costs anything, right? And there is some paintings that cost millions of dollars. And if you show it to average person, they're really going to say they hate the painting. It doesn't look nice. It's something very, very, you know, abstract. And people not going to like it. They do not know that it costs millions of dollars. At the same time, if you let them know that it costs millions of dollars, all of a sudden they're going to show that they appreciate it. Because people do like the bragging rights. You know, let's face it, people buy expensive cars a lot of times, or expensive watches for that matter, a lot of times not because they're better or more accurate or more precise or whatever, just because they're more expensive and it's more prestigious. So, and that's a part of the what makes a market, I guess, you know, demand. And we are trying to, like I said, make it more even-handed and more available to more people.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting dynamic. I mean, you know, there are, you know, those that are seeing this as a reasonable investment. You know, come down the line. Obviously, you've made the investment a little bit more safe than, if not safer than anything else in there as well. It's a unique idea. And then, like I said, there are other people that do invest in it, that appreciate the art as well. So it's an interesting dynamic. In terms of your business as well. Like I said, you're always looking for, you know, you're always, you know, adding new artists, you said, as it were, over the next couple of, you know, as you go on as well. Is it something where the artists approach you, or is it something where you approach the artist, or is that, is a little bit of both?
It's a little bit of both, and like I said, we want to expand this relationship as we go along to, you know, many, many artists, hundreds, perhaps thousands of them. One other thing I'd like to point out to your listeners, it's what we offer, not just art as a safe investment, it's a peace of mind. It's not just, you know, because one of the things what you do, let's say you buy one of our art, let's say hypothetically speaking, for $10,000 or $50,000 or whatever it is. And now this money is protected and preserved for you. So nobody can take it from you. Like normal investments, like a stock, bonds, even your bank account could be taken from you, okay, by creditors or by, you know, lawsuits or by, you know, for taxes or something like that. Okay, with us, this money is preserved for you. Nobody really can take it away from you. So you can be penniless in another country, and you still be able to recover your money. So, and it's liquid versus like something else. Like if you have even like a gold, let's say, you have to have a possession. Or if you have a standard art, you have to have a possession to benefit, right? Because otherwise, you can, you know, you can might have a ton of gold, but if you don't have it with you, you cannot benefit. With us, people can benefit even if they don't have the art. Okay, they can actually claim their return without having the art.
Yeah, and I want to mention, you guys can go to liberatorart.com. You guys can check out some of the pieces that are available to you as well, and you can find out more about the business end of art as well. Anything else that I'm missing at all, Zig?
Well, one other point I'd like to mention that we created our company really for the benefit for the people, and we are welcome, people to join us if they wanna buy our art or if they wanna just be like brand ambassadors. We offer up to 5% commission on the art for people they refer, so people can make pretty good income on it if they want, or they can just benefit from it. We think it's like one of the best financial liberation vehicles that people can have today.
Yeah, so I mean, it's great. Like I said, and you guys can go to liberatorart.com, and you guys can check out, like I said, all the benefits of owning a piece of art, and you can take a look and see the pieces that are available to you. Even if you're a low end investor or a high end investor, you guys can check that out as well. Zig, best of luck to you coming up with your company, and congratulations on your successes so far, and thank you for. Thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me. And have a good day.
You too. See you later, Zig.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
That was Zig Gruz, everybody. You guys can check him out at liberatorart.com. You guys can check that out as well. So if you ever wanted to invest in any art or whatever, they're guaranteeing that that your artwork's going to appreciate over the next decade. Even if you're wanting a nice little cheap investment, or you wanted to, just have a nice piece of art to hang in the house, please do so. I know he's trying to downplay that, but art is about art, I think, at times, too. So I kind of where I disagree with him on the fact that, oh, it's an investment, all this, but I also consider it also a piece of art to be put in your house and appreciated. So, go to liberatorart.com and definitely check that out as well. Like I said, coming up on Monday, we're going to have Summer Moore. She's going to be talking about her upcoming movie that's currently available. Actually, it's currently available on DVD on demand. We'll be talking a little bit to her about her movie, her horror movie coming out. And like I said, Sue Lynn LaFontaine will be on Tuesday to talk about being in Fat 7. And then on Thursday, we're on The Black Half. Like I said, we'll have a bunch of different other shows going on in terms of it as well. You guys can check out our website at www.vegaspodcasting.com. That's vegaspodcasting.com. And you guys can check out some of the shows that you may have missed over the past couple weeks, and we'll have an announcement about who all is coming in the next couple of weeks, hopefully, as well. So go to VegasPodcasting.com. Follow us on Twitter at SWIV, at SWIV, and Somewhere in Vegas on Facebook. You guys can check out some of the stuff there as well. With that in mind, we'll see you guys on Monday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, with Summer Moore. Talk to you guys then.